Welcome back. Welcome back.
Nice song.
Warren Zevon.
That was a good recall.
Halloween song. Kinda.
Who performed the Monster Mash?
I don't know who did the Monster Mash.
Boris Bobby Pickett.
Get out of here.
Really?
I don't know why my brain held on to that, because it's a relatively useless fact, but brain is a very mysterious organ.
Yep. All right. Welcome back to Inside Sports Medicine. That was some really in-depth analysis by Dr. Scott Blumenthal. Yes. The brain is a very mysterious organ.
It is. So that book I was describing to you, by the way.
Which is, by the way, the first one was one of my favorite books.
When you recommended it to me, and I loved it, because you recommend one book a year to me.
Yes, all I read is one book a year.
So anyway, so his third book is, again, kind of like what to expect in the 21st century. And one of the theories is that artificial intelligence, and it currently is, if you read about these companies like Google and Facebook and such, is working on hacking into the human brain. In other words, predictive analytics will, artificial intelligence will tell you what you want before you know it.
Oh, dude. I mean, that's happening already.
It's already happening.
That's happening
already. But the way that he describes the threats to our society by these mega intelligence corporations, and like you said, we're already seeing it, but you know, you turned me on to this author. He's absolutely brilliant.
So the book we're talking about is Sapiens, as in Homo sapien, but it's called Sapiens, A Brief History of Mankind. It's what, 5 years old, perhaps? I enjoyed reading it, and he has, I can't remember the author's name, Scott.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Because we both forgot it, but Sapiens.
His name is Yuval Noah Harari.
Yep. He's a professor at a university in Israel.
The Hebrew University of Jerusalem.
There you go. But fantastic book. Kind of an easy read. The first third of the book is fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. It talks about how we got from animals on the prairie of groups of 10 to 12 to where we are now, where we have 7 billion people on the planet. Fascinating.
And all had to do with the brain.
Yeah.
That's why
it was the development of the brain. The development of cognitive thinking. That's what really separates us from...
21 Lessons for the 21st Century.
That's the name of the book?
The new book. And it's... That should be your book you read this year.
All right. Well, I need to finish the second one. But okay. All right. So Dr. Loveland, Dustin Loveland is on the phone with us this morning. Good morning, Dustin. How are you?
Morning. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to all this heavy stuff we've been throwing out.
Do you have any book recommendations for our book club?
No, you know, this is going to be a bad review because I don't remember the title, but there was one recently talking about, it's essentially if you went back in time to when man was first evolving, what we know now, what could you use to further society? And it says if we just started teaching people to talk, we could be advanced by 200,000 years. Because that's how long it took for us to start communicating, essentially. So it's kind of like if you get in a time machine and go back in time, here's all the stuff to do. Teach them math, teach them these things. But no, I appreciate the banter.
Yeah, fascinating. So we were talking, I can't remember if it was the last segment or the segment before that, that the NFL's got an injury problem. We are seeing it, especially in this particular season of 2020, where there wasn't a preseason, there was a 5 or 6 month layoff, and then we're seeing all these players go down. We've always had a bunch of players go down in the NFL, but it seems a bit out of whack even by NFL standards. And I'm wondering if you're noticing that in your practice as well. Now, Dr. Loveland is a sports medicine physician at the Andrews Institute up in Frisco, and his area of specialty is primarily adolescents and pediatric orthopedics. Are you seeing that kind of rash of injuries as well?
Yeah, anecdotally, yes. With the NFL, there's a ACL Recovery Club Twitter account that I like that actually counts them every year, and they're currently, this is as of like a day or two ago, they're at 29, and it was 34 total last season. So
wow, let me analyze that. So 34 total in the entirety of the 19 season, and now we've got 29, and we're what, a third of the way through?
Not even halfway through.
Right.
Wow.
And so, you know, I noticed it anecdotally because, you know, we were kind of, without thinking about it, like, hey, this will be a pretty chill fall because, you know, we'll have this layoff. We won't have these, you know, summer soccer ACLs or anything. And we're like, dang, we're because we keep a database of ours. And we're like, we're going to top last year's ACL surgeries of 2019 in a year that we were like expecting, you know, numbers to be down and all that. And so I kind of just noticed it anecdotally before really looking into it. And then, you know, now looking back, there's a lot of people smarter than us in May and not in the States, but in other countries that are like, hey, everybody needs to be on the lookout because they were predicting this beforehand of this, your training at home, individual training is not going to prepare us. And then we jump into, you know, open the country back up instantly. There's no preseason. We just get out there and play. And, you know, I think people kind of predicted it, but yeah, definitely seeing the same thing we saw or that we're seeing in pro sports in the office too. And, you know, one thing I thought was nice initially was without the sports was, you know, I had kids wanting to go back at, you know, 8-9 months and all well and good, but like there's no sports to go back to. And so it was actually a reassuring thing at first. And that quickly transitioned to being overwhelmed with new injuries. And then kind of one of the sadder aspects is kids that are going back and re-tearing because they didn't have that
accommodation,
full-time performance training going into it. And, you know, they're all felt like they had served their time of rehab and recovery and were probably weaker going back than they would have been a couple months before.
So I had an interesting conversation yesterday with an adjuster, and it was not about sports medicine, but it has sports medicine parallels. We were talking about. So I need to give everybody a little bit of background here. Very few of us really like to do work comp injuries because the paperwork is immense. The approval process is
onerous.
Yes. And anyway, so very few of us like to do it. I do work comp for Dallas police officers and firefighters. I do it. I don't need to tell everybody why, but I do it because it's kind of a way to pay back. Anyway, so I was speaking with the head of the adjusters, and I was explaining to them that just because someone is back to full duty does not mean that they're fully healed. Mm. Those are two different timelines. And the same thing in sports medicine. The sports medicine parallel, and I actually mentioned this to the adjusters. It was a big conference call. I said, look, I may have someone come back from an ACL injury and participate wearing a brace, et cetera, but that does not mean they're fully healed. You know, it may take several more months. And like you, Dustin, 8 to 9 months is kind of my timeline to come back from an ACL injury, but it's probably 12 months before they can participate and not even think about their knee. Don't you agree?
Right. And there, I believe it was at AOSSM a couple years back, a group from Europe presented a study, and they said, you know, it was kind of playing devil's advocate, but they said, hey, we've proven that you continue to improve and heal over 24 months. And if we're saying you're healed at 24 months, why, you know, it wasn't realistic, but they're saying that's the time. Why isn't that the time that we go back if we're waiting until a patient is healed and as strong as they're going to be? And I think there's something to that. And I was at a football game last night, and a Division I SEC commit who was recovering from a knee injury last season you know, last season he looked like 05 Vince Young out there. And then I looked at him, you know, he was on the opposing team and he was kind of scared out there. He just wasn't, you know, they won the game, but he wasn't threatening. And you could tell, even though he was pushing 12 months, he didn't look the same. And, you know, I bet he does the following season, but it's tough. And, you know, there's a mental aspect to it as well.
Oh, absolutely. So two things that are really slow to come back. One is the mental, one is the speed and quickness. Again, this is part of my spiel when people are coming back from ACLs. You're not going to be healed at 8 to 9 months, but you're going to be healed enough to participate in basketball or soccer or whatever, and you can still get better for up to 12 months. Now, you know, this group out of Europe says 24 months. Look, for Tommy John surgery, I don't know if it was Dr. Andrews that said it, but it's 2 years before you can really fully recover from Tommy John surgery. And in my humble brain, Tommy John surgery is kind of the elbow version of the ACL. Why wouldn't the ACL be the same?
Right.
But as common as ACL injuries are, you're going to have a real hard time if you're holding people out 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
We still get, and you were you know, when the pendulum was the other way a little before my time, when it was, you know, and docs in town will still do it, that, you know, you just check get your calendar out, and whenever that 6 month hits, you're good to go back. And I still get a lot of tearful visits in my office for a 6 month follow-up that they expected to be cleared because someone they know got cleared at 6 months and is doing fine. And so that's something we deal with too.
Yeah. So that's always boggled my mind. And this is definitely before your time, 'cause I know how old you are. There was an accelerated rehab program that came out of the Midwest. I want to say it's out of Cincinnati. But anyway, the rehab program was to get people back from ACL injuries at 4 months.
Mm.
And I looked at it and I read the paper and they were talking about their results. And I was thinking to myself, wait a second. The graft is not healed at 4 months. They may be done with rehab. They may have symmetric strength. They may have agility. But that graft is not healed. And it absolutely never made sense to me. And within a few years, that accelerated rehab program kind of fell by the wayside because the recurrence rate was through the roof. So can you imagine a youngster ACL coming back at 4 months and what the re-rupture rate would be? It was unacceptable.
Right.
But that was a thing. And this is how sports medicine is. This is how medicine in general is. You know, you come up with a paper, perhaps it's not substantiated by other groups, but you come up with a paper and it comes out of a relatively famous center. Next thing you know, everybody's sending people back at 4 months and you're redoing a whole bunch of ACLs. Made no sense to me. You just have to understand the fundamentals.
Yeah, I mean, I usually tell the kids when they're doing, I mean, you can follow the money, like look at a big money athlete and watch what they do. You know, I don't know what Saquon's recovery will look like, but you know, he's not going to go back at 6-7 months. Like these are guys, you know, if you look at the most important, if you will, athletes, like they rehab the right way. And you also remember, like, those guys are, it's a full-time job, their rehab. We get these kids that'll, you know, a devoted kid will spend 3 hours a week in therapy. These pro athletes who are already kind of genetic freaks in a good way are rehabbing as a full-time job, and we're still holding them out, you know, 9 to 12 months guaranteed.
Dr. Loveland, got a question for you, man. This is Brad Bilal
here.
Hey. The ACL rate, the ACL injury rates that we see in the NFL compared to high school, are there any numbers that show that there's disproportionately more in the professional game versus high school? And if not, what are you seeing? Is there more in the professional sports or more in professional football versus high school? Because one of the things we talk about on the show is, you know, this bigger, faster, stronger. And so, as you know, the ACL is only going to be able to take a certain amount of, you know, force and strain. And so theoretically, I feel like there's going to be more in the professional game because these guys are just so much bigger, faster, and stronger than the high school athletes. Is there any tangible evidence that shows that? And if not, what do you see and what are your thoughts?
Well, the confounding variables. So if you took 32 high school teams at this point, you're not going to see, most likely not going to see 29 ACL. So that goes back to bigger, faster, stronger. You know, Saquon's ACL is, not much different in size than than a kid in the marching band. And so, yes, that makes that look a lot worse. But then, if we're excluding just football and you add in the females, add in soccer and basketball, well, then that rate may seem a lot higher because you're adding in a higher risk population there. But I'd say overall, the numbers are going to be increased in the NFL for the reasons that you said. We're getting bigger, faster, stronger at an increasing rate, and it's just under too much load in that situation. I think the re-injury rate is definitely proven to be much higher in our population of the high school, college, for a lot of reasons, but. That initial injury, depending on how you look at it, you could kind of say either way. But right, so 32 random Texas high school football teams won't have an ACL apiece at this point.
Yeah, so last year at the Andrews Sports Medicine meeting, I introduced the concept of ACL insufficiency. And it took me about 30 years of research to wrap my head around that. Theorize is that ACL injuries are a physics equation, and you can plug in the variables, bigger, faster, stronger, turf, shoes, whatever. You can plug in the variables. At the end of the day, if the force overpowers the ligament, then the ACL is not sufficient. And that is perhaps the easiest way for my feeble brain to understand it. Because, I've torn both my ACLs and we see, I'm sure in your clinic you see hundreds a year. There is a commonality that a majority of these are non-contact. It's not a matter of a 300-pound lineman falling on the side of your knee. Sometimes you're just running back a kickoff, or sometimes you're playing soccer and you plant to change direction and the thing goes. And the ACL insufficiency concept has to do with simple physics and vectors and, how many newtons it takes, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know how – you said it perfectly. Saquon's ACL is really no bigger or no different than any other person's ACL in size. And yet you're expecting it to do four times more.
Just because he's stronger.
Because –
It's not like the ACL got stronger.
It's not that the ACL got bigger. He may have got more muscular. He may have gotten heavier. He may have gotten faster, but the ACL hasn't. We can talk about this forever, and I don't want to lose our audience because it really is sophisticated stuff. But I would love to have you on as kind of a recurring guest if your schedule allows it, maybe once a month to talk about what you're seeing and bring it back to our audience.
For sure.
All right, Dustin Loveland from the Andrews Institute. Thank you. This is Inside Sports Medicine, Soriel Ballard. Loveland, Blumenthal on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket, coming right back.